Hi, I'm Charlie. I'm from the communications team at UHW. Welcome to UHW's More Than a Patient podcast. I'm here with Adam Wood. Thanks for joining us today, Adam.
Hi there, Charlie. Thanks very much for having me.
No problem. So tell us about you, who you are, what you enjoy.
I live in Chapel Fields over in the southeast side of Coventry, full of history. And that's really the reason I'm in Coventry. I'm actually from London. My background is graphic design, event management, that sort of thing. So that's what I do for a living. But I've got a massive interest in history. So I've met my now wife, who's a Coventry girl, moved here, and I just basically walk around Coventry looking at the history. So I do walking tours in the city centre, write books, give talks. And several of the listeners probably have been with me on one of the walking tours until quite recently, where I've been diagnosed with serious illness. I haven't been doing very much lately.
So sort of talk us through your diagnosis and sort of what made you come through our doors.
Well, at the end of August, actually it was the August bank holiday of last year, had a bit of a problem with my leg, lower back pain. Just thought I'd been doing too many walking tours, literally, and getting a bit older. Now I'm in my advanced years. I decided just to have a rest, wasn't going to go to the GP or anything, but my wife sort of nagged me to go to the GP, typical guy, I'm not going to go to anywhere. It got pretty bad. They gave me some painkillers, and then I lasted another week. My leg started swelling up, got red, got very painful. Went to my GP and basically was sort of admitted straight to UHCW, just really with the leg pain. It turned out to be much more serious than that. I was admitted eventually to the infectious diseases ward here at UHCW. The cellulitis, which were a problem with my leg, had turned to sepsis. I got quite ill. I was here for 12 days. The nurses came out to visit me at my house 9 days after that, giving me a daily antibiotic dose. So I was cleared of the cellulitis and the sepsis, but the consultant here was convinced there was an underlying cause that had caused that problem. And sure enough, it proved after an MRI and a CT scan that I had stage 4 advanced prostate cancer. It came as a bit of a shock because I hadn't had any illness or anything. In fact, I hadn't been to the doctors for 8 years. It was my first visit to the NHS in Coventry. I wish it was something just a little bit minor, like a cold or something, but to go straight to the GP and then end up at the hospital diagnosed with stage 4 advanced prostate cancer. It's in my bones, which is why I had the back pain, and in my lymphatic system. So quite poorly.
So when you were sort of delivered that news, how did you feel in that instance?
I think by the time I actually had the diagnosis, which was beginning of October, so probably about 6 weeks after I was first ill, I probably wasn't surprised. I know that sounds a bit strange, but I was very carefully listening to what the consultant said while I was on the ward, why they were sending me for an MRI and all the scans. So I picked up the bits of information and almost pieced it together myself. So when I got the actual sort of formal diagnosis, I had a good inkling of what to expect. It was a massive shock, as you'd imagine. You know, you're living with this life-limiting illness. I knew that there's treatments available. I didn't sort of take the news that, oh no, I've only got a week to go or anything like that. But I'll take the treatment. I know there's lots to go on. I wasn't told I've only got a short time. But probably my first reaction was, what am I going to tell my wife and children? But how are we going to handle that as a family? How are we going to have that discussion? Because this is something we're all doing together. It wasn't just me. Everyone's going on with their life like normal. This is something that's just now impacting the whole family.
So, Anna, you mentioned that it was the first time you sort of used the NHS in Coventry. What sort of tips would you give to someone who's potentially putting off being checked if they think something was wrong with them?
I think generally, I've not been the world's best at going to the GP for an illness, although I've been blessed with good health all this time. It wasn't the case I hadn't been to the GP for 8 years just because I didn't want to see the GP. I just generally was in good health. But when you've got symptoms such as back pain, mild back pain, aches, getting up, going to the loo in the night, typical now in hindsight, it's typical prostate cancer symptoms. And it's such a simple thing to go to the GP and get a blood test. It's non-invasive, 2 minutes of your time. It's so simple. So you could be ruled out, you're okay. Or if you, heaven forbid, you have got early stage prostate cancer, it's going to be caught early where it can be cured with an easy treatment. I didn't go, and it wasn't the case that I didn't want to find out. It just never crossed my mind. But of course, I went too late, had my PSA tests and scans, and obviously I'm at stage four, and it can't be cured. It's going to be a long treatment for me, and an expensive treatment for the NHS. But obviously, anyone that's thinking about prostate cancer or concerned, or they've got pain, or they just really want to have it ruled out, go and spend like 10 minutes of your time and go and see your GP and get that done.
So I know you mentioned about having to have the conversation following your diagnosis with your family. I suppose there's two sides of the coin on this. There's the support that they offer you, but also the support that they need to get as well as a group of people who are affected by it. So what are some of the most helpful things that sort of on your cancer journey you found in terms of support, whether it's for yourself or sort of for your family?
I think for, in general, having as much conversation with everybody as you can is really key, because it's understanding is really important with the journey, in whether you're seeing a consultant or you're having treatment. In my case, having chemo, I want to understand, what does that entail? How long is it going to last? What the side effects going to be? And if I understand that and have that conversation, I can pass it on to my family. My wife is very understanding, but my kids needed to have much more of a sort of a description from me as to what to expect. Because when you break the news that you've got stage four cancer, the immediate thing is, oh no, we're going to lose dad. So every time I went to see a consultant, and be that a biopsy or medication, and my hormone tablets or the radiotherapy, which is coming up shortly, being able to talk to my kids about that, but in a really just me, rather than just sort of reading out from a medical book, it just really helps them understand it, and they can accept it, and they can see that actually this is a good thing, having the treatment. I think having conversations with everybody and sharing that knowledge is really important, because it just makes things much more easily to accept, really.
So obviously you mentioned the importance of having those conversations with the clinicians here, and ensuring your family are looped into those as well. As a sort of overall entity, what sort of impact has the care that you've received, has it had on you, and sort of how has it allowed you to sort of lead your cancer journey in a positive way?
I've always been the sort of person that sort of thinks inquisitive and prepared to plan for what to accept, you know, rather than just having that surprise ahead. And having no knowledge of NHS, how it works, you know, as I said, like 8 years of going to the GP, I didn't even know what to expect on admittance to hospital. I'd never spent a night in hospital before this. And having that understanding, what's going to happen, it just helps me build up the picture. And I'm really now on board with it. Prostate cancer for me had always been on the horizon, something that happens, obviously very all too common, and it happens to someone else. But now it's happened to me, it's almost become like the centre of my focus. I'm still carrying on. I'm lucky that I'm in good health. I'm responding well to the treatment. I'm carrying on with my life. I'm still working as much as I can. I'm not shutting myself away, but I'm really sort of taking on board all the advice that the people here, everybody, that's from the guy who welcomes you at the desk to the people that serve me my coffee. I'm really sort of involving myself and immersing myself in the NHS experience. It sounds perhaps a bit extreme, but that's the way it is. I want to know that I'm getting the best treatment, what's going to happen after this, and where I'm going to go to get that treatment. And I've taken it to sort of now develop that and pass it on to other people. I know guys in my personal life that have sort of been worried about prostate cancer, because I've been on the journey and I've had a biopsy, for instance, prostate biopsy. I can talk to them, they've got an appointment, but this is what you can expect. And they're much more reassured, because they're aware what's going to happen on arrival when they leave. So I've started sort of passing on the experiences that I've picked up in my words, rather than perhaps like a medical leaflet, which says the same thing, but it's like a little bit more sterile, perhaps, than just talking to a guy that you might be sitting down the pub having a chat about the same things.
Yeah, so I understand you've got your own podcast where you sort of share your experiences sort of from your point of view. Why should someone check out your podcast to sort of learn about prostate cancer and the sort of journey you've been on?
I think just picking up what we said a moment ago, Charlie, that the podcast is something I decided to do right in the week of diagnosis. So it's 21 weeks or something like that now. And you might think, well, how do you find something to talk about every week? But believe me, with the journey, there is something, you know, you don't perhaps appreciate at the start of the journey how much you're going to be learning and experiencing. So I wished when I started the journey that there was someone I could talk to who had the same experience, and okay, I've got a biopsy appointment. How's that going to work? Or I'm on this hormone tablet. What's the side effects? And if I had someone to sit down and talk to about that, fantastic. So my podcast is very much just me sitting here talking as I am now. There's no sort of frills about it. I'm not using any medical language or anything like that. And I just put it out and it's picked up. It's not got huge followings, but it's sort of growing. There's probably about 20 to 30 listeners every day. I know from people getting in touch with me that there's guys that have listened to that and gone to have a test. Mostly no news, which is obviously great. But there's probably four or five guys that have gone to a test and got in touch and said they have been diagnosed with prostate cancer. But they only went through listening to the podcast and how easy it was. I've had gentlemen that have had other things going on with the journey. They've got chemo coming up, but they understand what the process is listening to me. There's lots of things on there. And what's really gratifying for me, it's quite humbling really, is that I haven't got a sort of target, but I've had emails from guys that I don't know them. I don't even know where they live elsewhere in the country. One guy was diagnosed that week, and he was trying to find some podcasts on Spotify that said, well, what's it like having prostate cancer? Just started a journey. And so he was just, I think he said he was just doing a tip trip run, found me after some sort of more medical focused podcast, found me, and he said it's just like talking to my mate. And he listens to me on his way to work, and his wife apparently calls me his new best mate because I'm talking about the same things that he's going through. And it's just great to know that I'm influencing or giving someone the reassurance that it's a journey you should be involving yourself in rather than having the resistance because you're a bit frightened or you're a bit unaware what's going on. Having the journey, you've got to have the treatment, obviously. But if you can understand what's going to happen and you can embrace it, it all makes it all that much easier.
I want to just sort of go back and sort of delve a little bit deeper into sort of the care you received here. And obviously, like you mentioned, there were various different departments that you've been through and various clinicians you've met and people that you've met along the way. Sort of talk to us about the impact that those specific departments have had and some of the characters that you've met along the way and sort of how they've supported you.
When I first received the letter, this is after I'd been discharged from the cellulitis and sepsis. I'd already had the MRI and the CT scan while I was on the ward, so those results sort of came in after I'd left. And then, yeah, sure enough, I got an appointment for two biopsies. So I went down to the urology department, met Mr. Jefferson, very clear into what to expect from the diagnosis. And sure enough, this is what we've got. It's advanced prostate cancer. Going to the little side room with a couple of the nurses who explained what was going to happen, who I could contact, things that I know completely oblivious to, such as the walking football that takes place. That's fantastic to know that sort of thing. So then I had the cards, the contact cards for them. So that was very reassuring that if I wasn't sure if I got someone to talk to, straight away I'm in the system and someone to talk to. Then I had the appointment for pre-assessment for chemotherapy. It's a worry. You go to the Arden Centre, what to expect, walk in the door, and there's dozens and dozens of people. And you're immediately struck by how many people are receiving treatment for cancer in Coventry. You're thinking, wow, there's a lot of people with cancer, but equally, there's a lot of people receiving treatment and hopefully going to be getting a good result from that. So I met Kelly and Betty at the Arden Centre, who have been fantastic. Met them a few times now. They've been absolutely wonderful with sort of checking progress on my treatment journey, but also reassuring me, any questions? And again, this is something I'd really reiterate. While you're going on the journey, just write down everything you can think of because you've got loads of opportunities to ask questions of people, and you will meet the people that will give you those answers. So in the Arden Centre, that's fantastic. And then everyone who had sort of discharges the chemo treatment, fantastic. Again, I've not had a bad experience with anybody here, but it's down to, I think, the patient side of you. It's how much you want to engage with people. And everyone can sit there quietly and just have a chemo thing or a tablet. But if you engage with people, it's sort of you're sharing that journey. They're part of it as much as you are. And I think that's it. The more people you can talk to, the better. That I think someone who's been really helpful is Lindsay, who's in the McMillan Centre, just behind the reception desk here at UHSOW. Some of the questions that she will come up with, she will ask you, let alone I ask her. I did interview her for my podcast. She's fantastic, but there's questions that you wouldn't even consider, such as when you're if you're having treatment and you need to go to hospital, no one's here to look after your pet. What happens? They can help you with that. They can help you with like money situations. If you're worried about money while you've got cancer and they're going to treatment, they've got all the experience in the world. So make sure you go and talk to McMillan. They're not there on the medical side of things, but they can sit down, you can sit and have a cup of coffee, and you find out all the information you need. They've been really, really helpful.
That's really good to hear. And I know you mentioned you've got radiotherapy coming up. What do the next sort of couple of months look like?
I've had an 18-week cycle of chemo, so that's 6 3-week cycles, and I've got the final one coming up next week. After that, I've got a CT scan booked in to do a comparison with the diagnosis scan, and then after that, I'll be doing 28 days or plus a week of daily radiotherapy. I haven't got the dates yet, but hopefully it will sort of fit around what I'm doing elsewhere, so I don't need to cancel too much. I'm sure that they'll be amenable to helping out. But again, I haven't met anyone from the radiotherapy side. In fact, in 2 days on this week, I got my first appointment with the radiotherapy team, I think, to plot the dates and sort of talk about the treatment. So again, it would just be moving on from the chemo side to the radiotherapy side. I'm sure it'll be, say, plain sailing, but I'm sure it'll be a process which I think will be, you know, okay.
And in terms of, you obviously mentioned balancing the treatment with your personal life and sort of work and everything else you've got going on sort of outside of your cancer journey. How important has it been from your point of view for the Trust staff to be sort of making sure that you are empowered within your journey, to make sure you are setting those dates and things like that to ensure you can keep enjoying yourself outside of the hospital?
I think that's really important, and it's very much appreciated. You know, obviously it's very easy to think that you've got an appointment date and you'll come in and 2 o'clock you'll be having chemo, and then you'll go home 2 hours later, and then you're just left alone until the next 3 weeks. It's not like that. You know, I'm getting letters and appointments for progress checks in between each cycle. How am I getting on? Any concerns? You do feel as though that people are taking care of you. And one thing I like, because I'm inquisitive and you could call me nosy, but when I have those meetings with Betty and Kelly, I'll say, well, you know, I'm interested in my PSA reading, which on diagnosis was 199. It's now down to 0.6 as a result of the treatment. So, you know, again, that as far as the medical staff are concerned, that's probably the least important thing. They're looking at my blood cell count. Is my immune system working properly? Is the chemo working on there? But for me, I'm sort of hanging my hat on 199 PSA coming down to on each treatment. I can see things are working. So it's like a positive, you know, keeps you in that good mood. So, you know, I can go around, and I'm very lucky I've not had a bad reaction to chemo. I had a little bit of fatigue, nothing too bad, so I'm able to get up in the morning, do a few hours work. If I feel tired, I'll just go and have a rest, you know. And you're made fully aware of what might well happen. A lot of the things to get on the sheet, and this is another thing to really bear in mind, that when you go and have your pre-assessment, you'll have a consent form to sign, and it's got a long list of things that could go wrong. You've got to be made aware of those. But the reality is that probably none of those things are going to happen. So I had the same sort of worry, that when you get home and you've got your cup of tea and you're looking at the list of 40 things, everything from a heart attack to some really not less serious things, you start thinking, well, this is quite serious treatment. But in reality, for me, none of those things happen apart from the fatigue, and I've had the odd thing. So don't take too much, stock in what you read. It's something you've got to be made aware of. But in reality, you're a person. So, you know, what's going to happen to you on your journey might not match what's in the paperwork, really.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks for coming and sharing your story with us, Adam. I really appreciate
it. You're welcome, Charlie. So I should have added on that. You can find the podcast at prostatecancercoventry.com. Nice and easy to remember and find. And if you do listen to it, please do share it. Thank you.